Okay, I have no idea how long we're supposed to stay in here. The last couple of years, they've told me to keep you all longer than everybody else. I don't know why, but maybe I'll get a hand motion at some point here, not from you, from the person in charge of the VBS. Some of you are calling a truce already, but let's get our Bibles and go to the book of Judges, and we will not be acting out this wonderful scene, but we will be studying it together, and hopefully you'll be able to use some of the PowerPoint, as most of it should appear above the scene. But what a great backdrop. I didn't even know I was going to have a background for Gideon tonight. But let's go to Judges chapter 6. When you go to the book of Judges, what comes to mind? Wonderful. When you go to the book of Judges, judges come to mind. What kind of judges? I don't remember who the boy was in Pew Packers who, when the question was asked, who was the woman judge? He said, Judge Judy. Are we talking about those kind of judges? Hopefully not. But that is what our minds come to think about when we think about judges. But when you read about these judges in the book of Judges, what was their primary role? Give me what? What was their primary role? Nicole's making jokes and I can't even hear.
Deliverers.
They were deliverers. Well, why did they need to be deliverers?
Because God's people
had found themselves in oppression to an enemy nation. Well, how did they end up in oppression to an enemy nation? Oh, they disobeyed. They turned against God. When you read through the book of Judges, you have this vicious cycle that they continued to go through over and over and over. You see a little bit of this. Look at the last verse you have in Judges chapter 5. What does the last verse of chapter, the last sentence of Judges chapter 5? Land had rest for 40 years. They had rest for 40 years because of the story we're going to look at tomorrow night about Deborah. She was the woman judge, by the way. It wasn't Judge Judy, just in case you're trying to figure out who it was. Here's Deborah, who was the woman judge. We'll talk about her tomorrow night. But because of the efforts that the Lord accomplished through her, the land had rest for 40 years. They were not in oppression for 40 years. They were serving the Lord for 40 years. And then you get to Judges chapter 6 and verse 1, and what does it say? Then the children of the Lord did evil in the sight of the Lord. It says that over and over and over again throughout this book. So the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian for 7 years. Now, why would the Lord do that? Why would He go back to Judges 4? We're going to see this tomorrow night. But look at what chapter 6 says. He delivered them into the hand of Midian. Chapter 4 and verse 2. Instead of the word delivered, what do you have? The Lord sold them. How much did He get for them? What was the going rate for a bunch of reprobate, disobedient children? Why did God give His people over to the enemy? To teach them a lesson? Because of their sin? Because their sin had consequences? Think about that terminology that the Lord gave them over, delivered them over. Think about what you know from Romans chapter 1. About the sin that's talked about in Romans chapter 1 and how it says that God gave them over to do those things that they wanted to do. If God's people want to sin, is He going to force them to stop? No, He's going to allow them to keep going. And if they desire to continue on that road, He is going to deliver them over completely to it. What does 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 talk about? That if you don't have a love for the truth, then what will God allow you to believe? He'll allow you to believe a lie. So when we study the book of Judges, we see this cycle over and over, where God's people were faithful and they served him as long as the judge or the deliverer was alive. But when that judge died, then they forgot God. They turned against God. They started turning towards their own selves, their own desires, turned to sin, and their sin led them into oppression because sin has consequences. What's the wages of sin?
Death.
Separation from God. They were separated from God by becoming a part of these enemy nations, or these enemy nations taking dominance over them and ruling over them. And sometimes that happened not just for a few days. Sometimes that lasted for decades. How lost would you have to be to not realize for decades that you're separated from God? I mean, you would think that in the first few minutes they would realize, oh boy, we're so dumb. We forgot God and turned back to God. But some of this went for years and years. So here's 7 years that we're looking at in Judges 6. 7 years that they were in oppression to this to these Midianites. And we look at this story about Gideon, and we want to look tonight at the courage of Gideon. I think it's interesting when you read the story of Gideon that, you know, sometimes we assign certain tones or inflections to words, to people's statements. Have you ever done that? Have you ever got an email or a text message and you misread it? You didn't misread the words. The words were all there. But you misread the tone over from which it came. You thought they were mad. And so you returned in like manner thinking they were mad and you were going to be mad right back at them. When they weren't mad at all. You just assigned a tone to what they were saying that wasn't there. You've never done that, right? I'm the only one who's ever experienced that. Well, okay, chalk it up for me and Joe are the only ones who've ever experienced that. I think it's interesting to read through the story of Gideon and to try to read Gideon's words. Sometimes I think we have looked at Gideon, and maybe it's the right way to look at him, as a coward, as somebody who didn't have a lot of faith. The guy who said, oh, Lord, okay, I'll put the fleece out, but, oh, Lord, I don't know, I'm going to put out another fleece just to check it because he was a scaredy cat. Well, was he? Was he a scaredy cat? Was Gideon, was he fearful? Was he a coward? You know, there is a thing as a healthy fear, isn't there? And then there is that fear that's not a healthy fear. I want us to look tonight at Gideon as a courageous man. And you see this from the very beginning. Look in Judges chapter 6 where we are introduced to him. And by the way, when you're looking at this, they were in oppression to Midian for 7 years in verse 1. So the children of Israel in verse 2, they went up and made their homes in the dens and the caves because Midian was not allowing them to live in town. And every time they planted something, the Midianites would come and they would steal it. Look in verse 5. It says, where they would come up with their livestock and their tents, coming in as numerous as locusts. How many is that? By the thousands. If you read, go home tonight and get online and just read about swarms of locusts coming in into an area and how the locusts would just totally dominate and destroy. Go home and read the Minor Prophets tonight and read through the book of Joel and read about those locusts who came in, and possibly one of the meanings there in the book of Joel is that the sun was darkened because there were so many locusts that you could not see the light of day. You think about that being the number of locusts, and their camels were without number. You think about having that enemy camping over against you. And we get down to verse 11. Now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the terebinth tree, which was in Ophrah, which belonged to Joash, We don't know that name very well, at least not in this context. But here was a location that belonged to Joash, whose son was named Gideon. What was Gideon doing? Gideon was threshing wheat in the wine press. Well, that's a funny place to thresh wheat. What would you normally be doing with a wine press? Normally, you're trying to get juice out of a wine press. You're pressing the grapes to get the juice. He's taking a whole nother food substance in there to get a... Why is he threshing the wheat in the wine press? Because of the Midianites. What'd you say? Because he's hidden. The Midianites were coming in and stealing all of their crops. And so he takes it inside the wine press and he's threshing in there so that nobody could see him. Now, is that a scaredy cat? Or is that somebody who has taken his circumstances and has found a way to provide for himself and his family and for others? What would have happened to him, perhaps? We don't know the answer, but what would have happened to him if he was caught in that situation? You know, could there have been any trouble for Gideon? He's trying to hide it from the Midianites. So verse 12 says, the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him. Now, is the angel of the Lord just trying to be kind? Is the angel of the Lord just trying to build him up? Is he giving him a false compliment? The angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, the Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. Here is a courageous man. How do we know he's courageous? Because the angel of the Lord just called him that. The angel of the Lord just said, you are a mighty man of valor, valiant courage. Why? Well, for a multitude of reasons, perhaps. But one reason was because of what he was doing. So as we look at courage tonight in the story of Gideon, I want us to reflect on ourselves and to see how courageous are we, and what does it mean to be courageous? I'm going to give us about three things about what courage knows. Look in verse 13. Gideon said to the angel of the Lord, oh my Lord, if the Lord is with us. Now again, you can assign an inflection or a tone to that statement. You can assign a whining tone. If the Lord's with us, why is all of this happening to us? You could assign that kind of a tone. Or is it possible that Gideon already knows the answer to what he's about ready to say? Gideon said, oh my Lord, if Jehovah is with us, why then has all of this happened to us? Now think about it. If Jehovah is with us, why has all of this happened to us? All of this bad stuff has happened to us. And where are his miracles which our fathers told us about, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? Look at what he says at the end of verse 13. But now the Lord has forsaken us. Go back to what he said. He said, if the Lord is with us, why has all of this happened to us? What did he just do? He just answered his question. He poses this question. Why is all of this bad stuff happening to us if the Lord is with us? What does he do? Turns around and answers his own question. The Lord's not with us. Okay. The Lord is not with us. That's why all of this bad stuff is happening to us. Why is the Lord not with us? The Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. What did Gideon recognize? Gideon recognized that God's people had turned against God, and what they were suffering was the result of what they had done. The Lord turned to him and said, go in this might of yours. That's an interesting statement. What might did Gideon have? Go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel. I want you to remember the Lord saying that to him. This might of yours, you, Gideon, you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you? And look at Gideon's response. Verse 15. Oh, my Lord. Same way he started in verse 13. Oh, my Lord. How can I save Israel? Again, you can assign a certain tone to that. You could assign a cowardly tone, or you could assign a humble tone. Lord, me? Lord, do you see what me? How can I save Israel? Indeed, my clan. Are you serious? Don't you know my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house? Lord, you must be mistaken. Not me. I want you to think about what true courage does. True courage doesn't need to be mistaken for arrogance or for pride. You know, sometimes we might look at somebody who's courageous and we might mistake it for, you know, somebody who is full of themselves or full of their own abilities. Can courage and humility go together? They go together in a lot of packages in the Bible, don't they? I think they go together in the package of Gideon, courage and humility. Can you think of any other packages in the Bible where you have courage and humility together? Not courage and arrogance, but courage and humility together. The apostles? Is that Moses? Moses was the meekest man in all the earth, and yet, did he have courage? Who'd you say, Joe? Moses. Y'all are thinking on the same wavelength. There's something going on here. Okay. Anybody else you can think of? Peter. Did Peter have courage and humility mixed together? Who said something? David. Oh, you weren't calling my name. David. Did David have courage and humility mixed together? Jesus. Does Jesus present courage and humility in one package? Yeah. Courage knows how to act with humility. And it's interesting what Gideon says here. I am the least is the same thing that Paul said over in Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 8. Do I have that up here? Over in Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 8, Paul said, it's an interesting statement where he says, I am the least of the, I am less than the least of all the saints. How low is that? How can you get less than the least? You go and find the lowest person among all the saints, and Paul says, I'm less than that. Here's the Apostle Paul. Where do we put the Apostle Paul when we're ranking Christians? Where do we put him? Oh, man, they're next to Jesus, you know, right under Jesus is the Apostle Paul. Where'd Paul put himself? You find the lowest one, and you put me under him. So when God calls us to be courageous, when God calls us to be bold in our work for Him, does that require some kind of cockiness? No. Does it require humility? Here's Gideon. When the Lord says, you are going to save Israel, and Gideon says, Lord, me? How can I do that? I am the least of all of these people. The Lord said to him in verse 16, surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat the Midianites as one man. So the Lord said, and so he said to him, Gideon said to the Lord, said to the angel of the Lord in verse 17, if now I have found favor in your sight, then show me a sign that it is you who talk with me. And again, I think sometimes we have read that and we have assigned some kind of a cowardly or faithless. Well, Gideon just doesn't have any faith. He's got to ask for a sign. Is that a bad thing? To want a sign from the Lord? Now, it could be. But how could you determine back then and in the days of the first century New Testament times, how could you determine if somebody was a true prophet or a false prophet? Well, if they were able to perform some kind of a sign or a miracle. Now, if the angel of the Lord was talking to you, you would say that's got to be enough. But when the angel of the Lord appeared, sometimes they didn't even know. It was not an angel in an angelic form. It'd be in the form of a man. And so here's this appearance. Lord, show me a sign. So he said, do not depart from here, verse 18. I pray until I come to you and I bring out my offering and I set it before you. Lord, don't go anywhere. Now remember, we look at what he says. He asked for a sign, and in the very next statement, he says, you stay here. I'm going to go get an offering to make for you. And so the angel of the Lord said, I'll wait until you come back. So Gideon went in, verse 19. Prepared a young goat and unleavened bread from an ephah of flour. The meat he put in a basket. And he put the broth in a pot, and he brought them out to him under the terebinth tree and presented them. And the angel of the Lord said to him, take the meat and the unleavened bread, lay them on this rock, and pour out the broth. And so he did that. The angel of the Lord put out the end of his staff that was in his hand, touched the meat and the unleavened bread. The fire rose out of the ark and consumed the meat and the unleavened bread. And the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. He goes inside. The Lord is in his presence. And he goes inside to make an offering to bring out to the Lord. I wonder where he ever got an idea like that. Go back to Genesis 18. Here's Father Abraham. We sang about him tonight, I think. I don't remember all of the verses of that song and how they fit into this Father Abraham. I'm sure Father Abraham, right arm and left arm and all of that. But in Genesis 18, you read about Abraham. The Lord, chapter 18, verse 1, Jehovah appeared to Abraham where? By the terebinth trees. Hey, we're reading about those. As he was sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day. So he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, three men. I thought it was the angel of the Lord. See this appearance? Three men were standing by him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them, and he bowed himself to the ground, and he said, my Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight. Does that sound familiar? If I have now found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant. Let me serve you. Didn't Abraham have his own servants? I mean, Abraham was kind of the master, wasn't he? He had an army of servants of his own. And yet, when the Lord appears to him, he falls down on the ground and he says, don't leave me your servant. Let me serve you. Please let a little water be brought. Wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree, and I will bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh your hearts and that you may pass by. And as much as you have come to your servant, they said, do as you have said. So Abraham hurried into the tent. He's not lollygagging around. The Lord is there. He came to Sarah and said, quickly, make ready three measures of fine meal, knead it and make cakes. And Abraham ran to the herd, took a tender and good calf, not the one with the broken leg that they were just looking for an excuse to kill, gave it to a young man, and he hastened. Look at how quickly he's doing this. He ran. He told Sarah, quickly do this. He hastened to prepare the calf. He took butter and milk and the calf which he had prepared, and he set it before them, and he stood by under the tree as they ate. Where did Gideon ever get the idea of preparing a sacrificial meal for the Lord? Perhaps Gideon had heard growing up the story about Abraham and what Abraham did when the Lord appeared to him, and when Gideon had the opportunity, he was going to do just the same thing. He saw an opportunity to serve the Lord, and he grabbed it. Is it a sign of courage? Do courage and serving mix? You know, I thought courage was supposed to be the general of the army. He's supposed to have courage, and the general should never be involved in lowly service activities. He's got to be courageous so that everybody else can be courageous. Do courage and serving mix? What did the courageous Jesus do in the upper room in John chapter 13? The courageous Emmanuel got down and washed feet. Courage and service are beautiful companions. But you keep going. In verse 22, now Gideon perceived that he was the angel of the Lord. So Gideon said, "Alas, O Lord God." Now, I want you to back up to verse 13. O my Lord. Verse 15. O my Lord. Now verse 22. Alas, O Lord God. What do you see that's different? What do you see that's different between those three passages? He didn't address him in the first two as Jehovah, but now he addresses him as Jehovah. He says, "Alas, O Jehovah God, for I have seen the angel of Jehovah face to face." Then the Lord said to him, can you imagine this? The Lord said to him, "Peace be with you." Did the Lord ever say that to anybody else? You remember when Jesus, Jehovah, appeared to his disciples in the upper room after his resurrection? You remember what he said? "Peace be with you." Here is Gideon. Gideon has been living for 7 years in oppression to an enemy. You suppose he knew what peace was like in oppression to his enemy? "Peace be with you." Jesus is in the upper room with his disciples in John 14 and John 16, and he says, "My peace I leave with you." So he tells Gideon, "Peace be with you. Do not fear. You shall not die." So Gideon built an altar there to the Lord, and he called it Jehovah is Peace. And to this day, the writer says it's still there. What was Gideon getting ready to do? The skit that was laid out before us with the men that he was going to gather. What was Gideon getting ready to do? He's going into battle. And on the verge of going into battle, what does God say to him? "Peace be with you." How does that mix? You got peace and you got war. Lord, which one do you want? Lord, you're saying peace be with you, and now you're going to turn around and tell me go to war. You can't have both. Which one do you want, God?
It's not flowers and microbuses.
Say again?
We're not talking about flowers and microbuses.
It's not flowers and microbuses. What kind of peace are we talking about? The peace of mind? The peace of what?
Courage.
The peace of courage?
Comfort. He knew he wasn't going to die.
Do not fear. You shall not die. Mickey?
The peace that surpasses all understanding.
Okay. What Philippians 4 and verse 7 talks about. That there is a peace of God that can guard your hearts and minds that surpasses all understanding. If there's a peace of God, if there's a peace that God gives to us as His children, remember how Paul began and ended many of his letters? With that common Jewish greeting, peace. And sometimes we read over those and we just skip right into the letter and we say, well, that's just like dear so-and-so. Well, let's just get to the meat of the word. Well, don't jump over that peace too much. Because there is a peace that we can have as Christians. Now, do courage and peace mix? Can they mix? Yeah. True courage. True courage knows the peace of God. True courage is not afraid. It's interesting. Do not fear. Gideon, you're about ready to go into battle. 300 men versus 135,000. Don't fear. Really? Why not? Because I'm with you. My peace I give to you. And so here are some things that if we're to know true courage, then we need to know what humility is, true humility. We need to know what true service is. We can know what true peace is. Now, as you continue this story, you read about Gideon. You see that true courage takes God, and true courage puts God over everything else. There's nothing that's going to compare when somebody is truly courageous. Nothing's going to compare with the place that God has. Now, look at the command that God gives to him. How would you have responded? Verse 25. Came to pass the same night that Jehovah said to him, take your father's young bull, the second bull of 7 years old, and tear down the altar of Baal that your father has, and cut down the wooden image that is beside it, and build an altar to the Lord your God. What was the altar? What was that which was there that his father had? The altar of Baal. He says, your father has that altar. You go in and you tear it down. Trying to look for the verse back up here earlier in the chapter where they had gone in and built these altars during that 7 year period. You read about it all throughout these various cycles that they go through, that they continued to build these altars. His own father. Now, is that another parallel with Abraham? Abraham, the great faith of Abraham, the great father of the faithful. Here's Abraham. What was his father religiously? He was an idolater. Abraham's father worshipped idols. What did Gideon's father do? Gideon's father worshipped idols. And the instruction to Gideon is not go to your next door neighbor. That would have been one thing. Not go to the guy down the street. Go to your own father's altar, to his idol. Tear it down. And in that same place, build an altar to the Lord God on top of this rock in the proper arrangement. Take the second bull and offer a burnt sacrifice with the wood of the image which you shall cut down. When it comes to serving the Lord, true courage puts God even over family. How hard did this have to be? How hard? This had been going on for 7 years. How hard would it have to be for Gideon to go in and to tear down that which his own father had been worshiping? The thoughts with that, you know, here's his father. What's his father going to think? You young whippersnapper, you just think you know everything, don't you? You come in here and you tear this, you know what? When you get older, you'll understand. What did the father have to think? Here's his son. I don't know about this. I guess I do. Have your children ever taught you lessons? Have your children ever taught you spiritual lessons, biblical lessons, either by word or by action? Here's Gideon. He's living in an idolatrous land. And God tells him, you go in and you tear down your dad's altar. Now, here's what we do in the next verse. In the next verse, we start blaming Gideon for being a wuss. Because it says that in the middle of verse 27, he feared his father's household and the men of the city too much to do it by day, and so he did it by night. Big wimp. You know, he wouldn't do it in the daytime. He went and did it at night. Okay? Here's the question. Did he do it? He did it. Did God tell him what time of day to do it? Not in what we have. Maybe there was an extra sentence in there that we don't have, but from what we have, I didn't see a time to do it. He did it at night, but he did it. Verse 27 says, he took 10 men from among his servants and did as the Lord said to him. Can you imagine walking in to where your dad had been worshiping, and not only taking the time to destroy it. It'd be one thing to just run in there and destroy it, wouldn't it? I mean, you just get in your car and you rev it up and you slam down into gear. You just run it through there. You destroy it and you just step on the gas and you keep going, right? Task done, right? I destroyed the altar and I got out of town. But that wasn't all that God said to do. It wasn't just destroy the altar. After you destroy the altar, put the car in park, get out and do what? You go back. And in that place where they were worshiping Baal, you build an altar and you set it up in proper arrangement. Don't you do it sloppy. And you offer an offer a sacrifice to God. Is this man courageous? That he'll even take his devotion to Jehovah God and put it over his own family. But you keep going. And you see that as you read verse 28, when the men of the city arose early in the morning, there was the altar of Baal torn down. Hey, Cam, there you are. How long do you want me to go? You can just tell me if you want. They don't have to know. 8 p.m.? Seriously? Cool. All right. Yeah, we're moving. All right, so the men of the city come out. We're going to sing as we're going to speak as quick as Bible sings. All right, let's see how quickly we can get through this. Yeah, they ring a bell. Nice. Men of the city came out. They saw the altar torn down. They want to know who did this. Who did this? We want to know. Gideon had feared these men for good reason, because what did they want to do to the person? Look down in verse 30. Bring out your son Joash that he may die. What did they want to do to the person who destroyed this altar? They wanted to kill him. Gideon was someone who put his courage and his faith in God above his own family. He put his courage and his faith in God above his own self. Remember what God said to him. God said to him, "You, by your might, you are going to save Israel." And Gideon said, "By me? By me, Lord?" Now come down. Look at what happens in verse 36. And again, I think you can assign the tone, the inflection that you want to here. But try reading it like this in verse 36. Gideon said to God, "If you will save Israel by my hands, me? God, I mean, I'm the least. I'm the lowest. My hands? Okay, Lord, if you will save Israel by my hands, of you, as you have said," and then he talks about the fleece. He says, "I'm going to put the fleece out there, and if it's dry on the ground and the fleece is wet, then I shall know," the end of verse 37, "then I shall know that you shall save Israel by my hand, as you have said." Lord, I still can't believe it. I don't know if this is what Gideon is saying. This is David's look at it. Lord, really me? Okay, Lord. Little old me. You didn't pick anybody. You picked little. Seriously, Lord? Okay, Lord. All right, if it's going to be me, then show me on the fleece. And then the next day, show me on the ground. But in this process, what was he doing? He's taking himself out of the equation. It's not about me, God. This is about you. This is about your power. And so here are 32,000 men that he gathers together. I want you to think about that for a second. Gideon had torn down the altar of Baal. All of Israel had turned to idolatry. How did Gideon ever round up 32,000 guys who would follow him anyway? Where do you get that? The men of the city want to kill him. They want to put him to death. Drop back to verse 33 of chapter 6. "Then all the Midianites and the Amalekites, the people of the east, they gathered together. They crossed over and they encamped in the valley of Jezreel." They're ready. Here, they're in the valley of Jezreel. They are ready for battle. They have basically issued the challenge for war. "And the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. He blew the trumpet." And what happens? All of the people start gathering behind Gideon. Why? Because he stood up as a leader. You know, sometimes people are just looking for somebody to lead. Here were the people of Israel without a leader. And when someone showed a sign of strength and courage and leadership, what did they do? Rallied right behind him. What does that tell us about being a leader? Are there times where we need to stand up and take the lead for righteousness? And wouldn't you know it, that if we will stand up and take the lead for righteousness, there's going to be people who funnel in right by. They've just been waiting. They've just been longing for. They won't do it. But when somebody else does it, boy, they'll be right there behind you. Here was Gideon. They wanted to kill him at first. And now they're behind him. And yet, you've got 135,000 Midianites. At least that's the number when you combine the numbers that are over in chapter 8, down in about verse 10. Got about 135,000 of these Midianites. You've got 32,000 that they start with, down to 10,000, down to 300. Why did the Lord do that? Why did the Lord do that? The Lord said it. He said, is it chapter 7, verse 2? The Lord said it. I don't want you to think that you did this. I don't want Israel to think that lest Israel claim glory for itself. You need to know that the Lord did this. One person on Israel's side for every 450 on the other side. How are those odds for you? Well, except on this side, if God be for us, how many do you want to put on the other side? If God be for us, how big is that army over there? It doesn't matter. Let them be multiplied. Let them go and gather as many as they want, because if God be for us, who can be against us? What was that memory verse? The Lord is with me. I will not fear. What can man do to me? Why? Because the Lord is with me. If we're going to be truly courageous, and we can turn to Gideon, we can see some things in the life of Gideon, how Gideon allowed God to use him for his good. Think about that as we try to think about being truly courageous for the Lord. And hopefully something that we've talked about tonight has been helpful and beneficial for us. I believe that it is now time for you to go enjoy some cookies and drinks if there are any left.